streaming 24/7. This is Radio Influence. This is the Valor Hour, powered by the law offices of Ogle, Elrod, and Beryl on Radio Influence. Your weekly glimpse inside all things Valor Fights, and a look at what's going on in the rest of the MMA community. Here are your hosts, the president of Valor Fights, Tim Loy, and your color commentator, Casey Oxendine.
Welcome to the Valor Hour, a look into everything Valor Fights, as well as the headlines from combat sports across the world. Thanks for joining us, and remember to subscribe on Apple Podcasts as well as Stitcher. Also, a huge thanks to our tremendous sponsor, Ogle, Elrod, and Beryl, for supporting our cause each and every week. This week, we touch on a big upcoming weekend of MMA in the news and bring on the discussion during a big main event segment. And as always, Valor Fights President Tim Loy will address your questions during the Valor Hour Q&A segment. I'm Casey Oxendine, and I am joined by the president of Valor Fights, Tim Loy. Tim, we are back at it. Less than 2 weeks to go before Valor 48. I got to ask, are you feeling the crunch?
Yeah, man, we got a lot, you know, a lot of area to promote, and not a lot of time to do it. It's a huge area to promote over there, and you know, we've been hard at it for the past month. This will be our fifth week going out there, and so it's cumbersome work, but got to happen.
Well, we're also joined by our usual suspects this week, Alan Poole and Mark Laws. Guys, are you ready for this big Valor Fights 48? You guys have been out there a little bit in Nashville doing your thing, right?
Yeah, I have. I've been doing promotion with him, and I'm excited as hell for this card, man. Of all national cards we've ever ran, this is probably my most favorite.
Alan, how about yourself?
I agree, man. This is the best card. I think this is probably the best Valor card, possibly to date.
Yeah, well, especially a big main and co-main event. We've got WMMA prospects. We're going to be speaking with them a little bit later. I think it's going to be spectacular. Now, let's get on into the news to kick things off. Invicta FC 28 kicks off this Saturday night. That's from the Union Event Center in Salt Lake City, Utah. And it's going to be a big one. We got a big main event title fight, 115 pounds. Mizuki Inoue taking on Vima Zandahoba. And it's going to be it's essentially Japan versus Brazil, Tim. Talk about how this overall card kind of shapes up here.
It's very international at the top of the card, is, you know, the top four or five fights. It's, you know, a league of nations, if you will. So, you know, it's Japan and Brazil here. I honestly wouldn't. I'm not that familiar with the Brazilian Jindaroba, but you know, she's undefeated. It looks like she's got good jiu-jitsu. Mizuki's been around a while. I would think the winner of this is probably going to get a UFC fight or a contract. And you know, a few other names on the card that have been in the UFC already: Pearl Gonzalez, and you know, from the Ultimate Fighter, Deanna Bennett and Christina Marks. And Callie Robbins is kind of the undefeated prospect. I think her and Pearl Gonzalez is the name, but I think Robbins is the prospect. I think she's the one to watch for here. I think she's the one that's kind of that upward trajectory, if you will. But beyond that, it's a lot of prospects, you know, a lot of 1-0, 0-0, 2-0, you know, some ladies that are, you know, on the come up. So this is one of those slow weekends in MMA where, you know, the hardcores are tuned in, but your casual fans are going to be watching basketball.
You know, Mark, we've got Kelly D'Angelo on here later on. Of course, she's an Invicta FC vet. She's an Invicta signed fighter, in fact. You know, talk about Invicta, the event here, Invicta 28, and because they're going to Salt Lake City for the first time ever. You know, talk about the overall card and the event series as a whole.
Man, I'm a big fan of Invicta, man. It's Shannon's done a tremendous job of utilizing these final fighters, and their first trip to Salt Lake City is going to be huge. You know, a lot of times they run in the Midwest, and this is going to be a big step up, especially with a lot of international talent, and I'm excited about it, and I'm ready to watch it for sure. I'm a huge fan of WMA.
Well, I'll say
sometimes
this,
even more than men's MMA.
Well, there you have it. Well, moving on, you know, Invicta is not the only one making noise. It's LFA 36, and that goes down this Friday night from Morongo Casino Resort and Spa in Cabazon, California. That's where the Cabazon dinosaurs are, if you know your way around that spot. And it's going to be broadcast, of course, as always, on Axis TV Live. And we have a big main event, Ricky Simon taking on Vinicius Zanni, and that is for the LFA bantamweight title. Tim, talk about this card.
You know, this is one of those West Coast cards where, you know, you're going to have a lot of prospects from out that way. Not so many familiar names here, but, you know, there's the title fight. Like you mentioned, Ricky Simone, who we saw in the Contender Series last year. He's a legit guy, 11-1. I don't know much about the Brazilian, but I'm assuming that, you know, Ricky Simone gets in the UFC with a win. Jamal Emmers is another guy that, you know, is really close to getting the call as well. Beyond that, I really, you know, it's a lot of California prospects that I really don't know that much about.
Undoubtedly. Alan Poole, man, you've watched plenty of LFA. What's your take on the promotion and on this card?
Well, yeah, I'm not as familiar with this card as I probably should be.
No, you shouldn't be. Well, there's no reason for you to be.
But I hope they do well, and I hope it's exciting. And go LFA that I'm not familiar with. I hope you do well.
All right. Well, moving on, A64 FC. Number 3 takes place this Saturday night as well. Of course, that's going down at the Greenville Shriners Club in Greenville, South Carolina. And we've got a pretty big lineup there in the main and co-main event. Cody Wilson taking on Dom Waters in the co-main event. Nathan Williams, who we know very well here at Valor Fights, taking on Carl Deaton out of ATT, Tim. Those two matchups are pretty solid from top to bottom.
Yeah, I don't know that much about Cody Wilson. I know he's the hometown guy there. I know that, you know, he's a striker. I think he's from Ray Thompson's there. If he's not, maybe he used to be. But, you know, he's an exciting guy. He was a guy that was on the come up and had a pretty big record early. Went off and fought in Canada and on some bigger promotions and wasn't successful. So this is going to be a hometown fight for him, I'm guessing, you know, against a guy that was in the UFC and Dom Waters. You know, it's a good test for him at home. Certainly no layup. And then, yeah, of course, Nate Williams, you know, we love Nasty Nate around here. So rooting for him. He's in tough, though, against Carl Deaton, who is a, you know, going to be a really tough, you know, tough test for him. But, you know, those are the kind of guys he's going to have to beat to get to where he wants to be. So he's well aware of that. So, you know, Nate's kind of guy, though, you know, as they say, he doesn't turn down anything but his collar.
Undoubtedly. Well, that does it for our news and upcoming events, which means it is time for this week's Valor Hour Q&A segment. And, of course, you know what this means, Tim. You've asked your questions. Now Tim Loy is going to respond. Are you ready?
Wait, let's do it. How about easy?
First question. First day of spring this week, do you have a favorite season for putting on MMA events? Spring, summer, fall, or winter?
Wow, okay, yeah, that's a good one. I got to say that from a personal enjoyment perspective, I would say that I enjoy doing shows in the spring just because it's nice to be out promoting them and just to be out and about. The weather's nice, you know. But as far as just like when we do the best and, you know, from a, you know, profitability standpoint, we usually do best, it seems like, coming out of the winter, you know, right at the beginning of the year, January, February, we always come out of the gates real strong for some reason there.
Yeah, January is a killer, man. It's awesome. Okay, question number 2. What's a fight on Valor 48 that might be flying under the radar?
It seems like I've been asked this, like, every week. Let's see. I've given a nice little spotlight, though, to a few different ones. Let's see if I can change it up. How about, let's go to the amateur card and just kind of bring up some, you know, some randomness. I think that, you know, Joseph Long and Ben Holm is going to be a really good tie fight. Joseph Long is kind of your new, kind of that new class, new breed coming out of Cleveland from David Robbins, Killer Bees Camp. Ben Holm's a guy from Upper Cumberland that was really on a tear. He was a really good prospect, and he had beat some good guys, fought some really good guys, and then he just kind of went away. And you know, had, you know, regular life, took over fighting, but now he's coming back. So you kind of got that old guard versus the new guard. And I think that's a fight that'll be really good. And they're advanced ties, so we'll get to ditch the headgear.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that later as well. Question number three. Did you see the Cam Soda Legends announcements? What are your thoughts on this unique upcoming MMA card?
I don't think I know. I like, yeah, this is like proof that I don't read these questions before. What is that?
I'm figuring it out right now myself.
I'm like, what the fuck did you just say?
Cam Soda Legends.
Do you know what that is, Mark? Cam Soda Legends?
Cam Soda Legends brings MMA greats to the world's first interactive live broadcast where fans' votes count.
What are they competing? What are they doing? Are they fighting?
We got Rico Rodriguez and Alex Nicholson, as well as Pride veteran Felony Charles Bennett versus Bruce the Iron Lunch Medial, in addition to several others.
Wow. Yeah, so, I I'm pretty hardcore, and I didn't know about that. You didn't know about that either.
None of us knew.
Oh.
Wow. Well, so there you go. That's how you learn.
Is it
you
a fight?
You got the fans sending it in.
Yeah, the fans vote on who fights?
It appears to
or
be.
Or who wins.
I don't think they can.
The fans judge it.
Do the fans judge? I don't think so. I don't think you can do that. That would be too hard.
It seems like
they interact with the fighters in real time. As the fights occur, fan watching the live stream will be able to determine bonus money and provide extra incentive.
Oh,
so they won't affect the outcome, but they will be able to, you know, to interact, if you will. You know what's crazy? Of course, Valor Fights 48. We're going to be doing a lot of interacting too.
Yeah. Wow. So it's like you could do that on. You could do that same thing on Facebook, I guess, couldn't you? Just a lot, anything where fans can like chime in and do, and you know, vote somehow.
Yeah, I think so. But you're not going to get Crazy Horse.
No.
Unless, you know.
I'm taking Crazy Horse 100%, man. I've met that guy several times, and he's a savage.
He's a very, very entertaining man. I watched Crazy Horse way back in the day from, you know, when he was down fighting in Savannah and in those you know, regional shows. And he was always crazy. I was there the night that Crazy Horse, he won. He beat Todd Carney and jumps up on the side of the cage and turns a backflip off to the outside of the cage. And he landed on Sean O'Hare, the pro wrestler in the WWE. And they start fighting, and he's way bigger than Crazy Horse. Somehow he ends up jumping on O'Hare's back and choking him, and all kinds of craziness unraveled. And I was right there when it happened. I just stepped aside.
One of my favorite pictures ever is me with Crazy Horse at some event in Virginia. That guy is a psychopath. If there's anybody who's ever made for fighting, that's that guy. Like, that's all he knows, man. He's crazy.
What you see
legitimately
is what you get,
crazy. He'll probably get a check for it every month if he wanted to.
Tim, moving on. Next question. Which Balor Fights vet do you think would do the best on Dancing with the Stars? Conor McGregor's sister apparently is on the Irish version of the show.
You're asking who do I think would do the best on Dancing with the Stars?
Yeah. Yeah, the vet, which you, Valor Fights vet would do the vet.
Oh, golly. that's absurd, but how about Chandler Cole? He's the only one that I know can just break it down, like, you know, the
that's
drop.
That's great.
I was thinking me this whole time.
Did you cut a rug, man?
No, not at all. But I'm saying, if I'm versus Chandler, I think I got it.
Yeah.
Pretty sure I got it.
Gotcha. Very cool. All right. These questions are nice and original this week.
Oh, I know.
All right. Next and final question. Just announced that Joe Rogan, Jimmy Smith, and John Anik will be calling action at UFC 223. Aside from Casey and Vince, what's your favorite all-time commentary team in MMA?
Ah, That's good. You know, I gotta say, oh man, I guess it's kind of like played out, you know. But I like Rogan. I like listening to Rogan call fights and Goldberg. You know, that's kind of what we're. That's kind of the combo, the duo that we all kind of came along listening to. So, I mean, I guess it's hard to beat that in my mind.
I have to go. My all-time favorite commentator is probably Jim Ross. And I guess he's called a few MMA.
If I could go there, then I would definitely say probably Bobby Ventura or Bobby Heenan or Jesse Ventura.
Yeah.
With Gorilla Monsoon.
That's true. Yeah, those are all very, very good. It's funny because I think a lot of the commentators coming up in this era derive some of their inspiration more so from that style than rather the like Howard Cosell kind of boxing style. You know, yeah. I think it's a good blend of both. So
none of these guys are as good as those guys.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, that does it for this week's Valor Hour Q&A. Remember to email us your questions each and every week, and Tim will be happy to answer every one of those online. With that being said, it is interview time here on the Valor Hour. We are joined by Zach the Barbarian Otto, rising star of the UFC and coming off a huge TKO victory over legendary veteran Mike Pyle just a few weeks ago at UFC 222. Zach, thank you so much for joining us.
No problem. I appreciate you having me on the show.
So, Zach, coming off, as Casey just mentioned, a big knockout just a couple weeks ago over Mike Pyle, a guy who's been around for forever, you know, a legend in the game. Talk a little bit about that fight and how it felt to get out there and, you know, get, if I'm not mistaken, that was your first finish in the UFC.
Yeah, pretty cool stuff. Definitely something I wanted to get back to. I was known as being a finisher when I was on the regional level. So getting into the UFC and going to not only decisions, but these split decisions, were getting pretty frustrating. I didn't even think some of those fights were close. A lot of media outlets had me winning those fights, but it just kind of made the beginning of my experience in the UFC pretty frustrating. So I felt really good to just get back, be aggressive, and get a finish in there, and especially against a guy like Mike Pyle. You know, like you said, he's been around the sport forever. I was a big fan of his when I was coming up on the, you know, as through my amateur days and all that stuff. So when the call came in, I found out it was Mike Pyle. I really liked the matchup because he is getting older, and I felt like he wasn't as durable anymore, and I knew he had a long layoff. So I was pretty excited and confident about the matchup, but also I thought it was just cool because he's a name that I was familiar with. And shortly, you know, before the fight, I knew he announced that it was his retirement fight. So it was an opportunity with more people's eyes on the fight, watching it because it was going to be his last one. Good opportunity to show up and put on a performance, and fortunately I was able to do that.
Well, talk a little bit, you know, you'd mentioned the, you know, leading up there before this fight, you fought in America twice for the UFC, but also Australia, China, and Brazil. And I've spent some time over in Australia myself. I know that the time difference is crazy. It can really affect you, you know, as well as China and Brazil as well. Talk about, you know, how it feels to fight abroad on such a you know, a big show, and how much it takes out of you, or does it energize you? Do you really rise to the occasion in those situations?
I thought the way it kind of worked out with going to Brazil first kind of got me introduced to the idea of traveling long distances and fighting. You know, you don't change time zones too much when you go. You're going almost straight south. You're changing a little bit, but you're taking the long flight, but you're still pretty much on the same time schedule. And that was, you know, my first fight going international. And then, the next one went a little bit further. New Zealand's tough because now as you start to go over that international date line, everything gets, you know, just turned upside down. So it was a little difficult for me in New Zealand, but not bad. I was able to fight pretty early in the day. So I just kind of, you know, woke up and had breakfast and then headed to the venue and got it done and over with. But China was pretty difficult. Fighting that night, going across the international dateline, the longest flight, you know, furthest away from home, it was pretty difficult trying to get my sleep schedule changed around and all that. But I didn't really have any factor in the fight. It's not like my cardio was a factor or anything like that. So I just made a mental mistake and my opponent did a good job capitalizing. So, yeah, I mean, fighting international, it's not all it's really cracked out to be when you're the fighter, because you're cutting weight and you're getting ready for a fight and you're trying to make the adjustment. When you're coaching, it's much more relaxing, and, you know, you can kind of take it all in and enjoy the location. But still pretty cool opportunity seeing all the different cultures and different fans from all over the world and making fans all over the place, especially in New Zealand. They were all really into UFC and into the fighting and all the fighters, and knew who we all were and kind of felt a little bit more like a celebrity over in New Zealand than I am, you know, even just in my own city. So that was a pretty cool experience.
Well, you know, talk about the, you know, that's actually leading into the question I was going to say next. You know, fighting in those three different countries, you have three very different types of fans, if you will. You know, obviously, like you said, the New Zealand, Australian fans, they're hardcore. You know, they treat you guys like celebrities. Talk a little bit about, you know, the Brazilian fans, you know, who are known to be a little more savage, you know, a little more, you know, it's a little bit more of a hurdle rather than, you know, they're not trying to prop you up so much. And you fought a Brazilian there, of course. And then, of course, the Chinese fans who are, you know, more, you know, quieter, respectful.
Yeah, definitely a big difference between those two places. When I went down to Brazil, I was fighting a hometown guy, you know, who's very much known in the Brazilian jiu-jitsu world and travels all over that city to do seminars. So a lot of the people that were in the audience knew of him very well and were showing their support for him. And, yeah, when I walked out, they had the whole chant going, the "you're going to die" chant in Portuguese. And when he got announced, the whole crowd went crazy for him. So I just was kind of took it all in. I kind of smiled at my corners and laughed about it when it was all happening, because I was just like thinking like, wow, this is like a really cool experience, you know. I didn't feel like in any way like my security was endangered or anything like that. So it was all in good fun. And, you know, when I came out of the cage and I lost a split decision, but, you know, it was a good, obviously, back and forth fight and stuff like that for 15 minutes. As I was walking back to the locker room and make my way down one of the aisles, I just kind of gave a gesture like, thank you guys. And I had a whole bunch of people stand up and clap their hands and all that. So, you know, they showed their support back. They made it clear that, hey, it's nothing personal. We're just trying to show some national support. So it was a cool experience. And then, like you said, in China, much more reserved people. And the way we walked out, actually, so they kind of had a curfew for the night over in China, and the whole event had to be done by 10 p.m. And we were going kind of late. The Chinese government had a lot to kind of, it's a long story, but they had a lot to do with the event. So it was running a little late. I didn't even get a walkout for my China fight. It was literally somebody from the UFC grabbed me from the locker room and said, you got to walk out right now. And I was like, all right, well, let me just, you know, put my stuff on. They're like, no, you got to go right now. In fact, take it all off, like as you walk. So as I'm walking, I'm like taking off my clothes to get up in the cage. I had no walkout music. It was like dead quiet as I walked in the cage. And then my opponent was literally right behind me going in the cage too. And then we just like quickly announced and started fighting. So it was
wow.
Unorganized and weird for a UFC event, you would think. But so two totally different kind of experiences, I guess, walking out for fighting people, hometown guys out of the country.
Yeah, you're definitely a promoter yourself, right, Zach?
Yeah, that's true. Yep. I do. So, I co-own a gym in Milwaukee. And then I also co-own a promotion in Milwaukee as well.
Great.
I have the same business partner with both of those. His name is Jake Clip. So it really works out, the dynamic between us. You know, we're both coaching and doing all that. And I'm on the road quite a bit. I'd say, you know, at least a weekend every month, maybe two weekends a month, cornering fighters and, you know, holding pads for fighters, but then my coaches here, they also, you know, make sure that I get my work in as well, and teaching classes and stuff like that. And then once I get a fight scheduled, I kind of back off of all the teaching. I still work with a couple of my select training partners and stuff like that, helping them get ready, but mostly they're helping me get ready at that point. And Jake kind of takes over the business side of things around here. And then, yeah, we only do like 3 or 4 shows a year. So I can usually kind of schedule that around my fights and stuff like that. And it's not too bad. It's not like we do a show every month or anything.
Nice. Well, it's certainly the American dream. Real quick, Zach, go ahead. If you can, you go ahead and give us your shout outs, you know, any of the, you know, your teammates, your family, so forth, all the people that have helped you along the way. Also, you know, let us know where we're going to find you next. You know, if you've got any news, let us know where we're going to see you in action. And then all of your social media plugs, all the places we can find you and follow you, Facebook, Instagram, and so forth.
Yeah, cool. You guys can follow me. I'm on Instagram. My handle is @TheBarbarianMMA. And then you can just find me on Instagram or Facebook under my name, Zach Otto. Please follow. And shout outs, of course, my team, Pura Vida MMA in Milwaukee here. We've got a lot of up and comers. We just got one of my students, Leah Letson, signed to the UFC. And we have a couple more people in the pipeline coming up real quick here. By the end of 2018, we're going to have a handful of people in the UFC. So I just really appreciate all my training partners and coaches that help me get ready, specifically Jay Clips, Solo Acosta, and my brother Nick Trost. Yeah, guys, that's it. So,
Zach Otto making waves in the UFC. Of course, with that big victory over Mike Pyle, but the sky is the limit for this guy. Be sure to follow him and watch as his career progresses. Thank you so much, Zach, for joining us this evening.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Anytime.
We are joined by Lindsey Sweet T. Jones, undefeated professional MMA prospect fighting out of the renowned ATT Coconut Creek. He returns to action next Saturday, March 31st, as he faces the charismatic Robert Hale at Valor Fights 48. Lindsey, thanks so much for joining us.
Anytime.
Excited to have you back, man. Your first main event as a professional coming up now in just like 9 or 10 days. So it's upon us. You know, how excited are you to be, you know, main eventing in Nashville against, you know, a guy in Robert Hale who will represent your toughest challenge thus far as a pro? You know, is it pressure? Or are you kind of feeding on it and just kind of embracing the moment?
You know, I'm not really feeling any pressure. You know, it's just another fight at the end of the day, no matter if I'm at the beginning of the card or I'm at the end. But, you know, like any fight, still training hard, still training, you know, to the best of my abilities and training smart. And I'll be ready to go for that main event win next Saturday.
And the last time in Nashville, the last time you fought in Nashville was kind of your coming out party. Your pro debut was there, knocking out former WWE pro wrestler Kid Cash. So, you know, that place has got, you know, the vibes are good there for you.
Yeah, that was a that was a really fun pro debut for me. You know, that was kind of like a gift from the MMA guys to me. So, enjoyed it.
So this is kind of interesting. You know, you guys are very contrasting personalities, but both of you have your way of talking, you know, very interesting. And you can definitely set up some fire there on the mic. You know, talk a little bit about Robert. You know, of course, we had him on last week. I don't know if you listened or not, but we had him on. And of course, he's saying he's going to get the finish in round one. He says he's going to, you know, make a statement, you know, because, you know, of Sweet Tea. And, you know, also talk about, you know, it's been July, you know, last July since you competed. You know, since last July, Robert Hale's competed 4 times and he's on a 2-fight win streak. So talk a little bit about, you know, those contrasts and, you know, and your take on the fight going into this.
You know, I actually, I did listen to what Robert had to say. I know his personality and I know, you know, he enjoys the talking aspect and entertainment aspect of the fight game. But, you know, I'm a competitor. I'm not a fan. So I don't want to get caught up in all the hype. So I stay away from that. Now, Robert as a fighter, you know, he possesses some tools. On the feet, he has a good jab. He doesn't do a lot of movement, you know, but I have a lot of great coaches down here at American Top Team, and we broke down his last three fights. You know, when he fought Sid Wheeler, he fought a certain way, and then he fought this last fight, I think it was in the end of February for, what was it, 864? You know, he fought a complete different way, you know, but all of his work seems to be done on the feet, you know, and it's primarily boxing. He doesn't mix a lot of knees or elbows or kicks, you know, it's jab, hook, right hand, but... You know, he possesses the seam like some power, and you got to stay away from that. Be a smart guy in there, and you know, fight smart and get the win.
I gotta say, that's one thing we've always gotten out of Sweet Tea is variety. We've had, you know, we've had the stand, what was essentially a standing knockout. We've had a vicious knockout from elbows and mount, and then of course some awesome submission as well. So you know, you're gonna get, you know, well actually you don't know what you're gonna get. You know that you could possibly get anything, you know, when you get Sweet Tea. So I'm really excited for that main event, and also for the winner, you know, to fight Jason King. We knew that no matter how this one shook out, a fight with Jason King would be all action. So not looking past Robert Hale, but you know, just let you know, we're really excited about the prospect of either one of you guys, you know, fighting King next.
Yeah, I think it'd be a big mistake to look past Robert, because he definitely possesses fight-ending characteristics, you know. And with a guy like that, you can't look over him. You know, you have to be 100% focused on that task at hand.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, of course, we've got Mark Laws with us here as well. Mark, you've patched up a few of Lindsay's previous opponents before. You know him very well. Any words, any questions for Sweet Tea?
Actually, I patched up all of his opponents. This guy doesn't get paid by the freaking minute, man. He gets in, gets the job done, and cashes a check and bounces. And that's what I like to see, you know. That's what we're here for. You know, I mean, he can finish people in any way. Robert Hill might be his biggest test to date. However, I really feel like Lindsay's just got so many tools in his arsenal that if you try and negate one of them, he's only going to hit you with the next one. And you better be ready. You better have your lunch packed, because he's got it all packed. Man, he's ready for you. So I'm excited for this fight. Probably waking somebody up one way or another, and I'm super excited about it, man. I'm a big Sweet Tea fan. I'm a big Robert Hell fan. You know, anybody who goes around with Sid Wheeler is it can bang. You know, but sounds like he's pretty dialed in, and I'm excited for this fight for sure.
For sure, you know. When you go to fight Robert, you know, speaking of the Sid Wheeler fight, how they fought each other, you know, I don't think that's the smartest way to fight a guy like Robert. You fight right into Robert's game plan, right into it. And the percentage of him winning in that scenario is pretty high. So, you know, you have to be able to mix it up. You have to be able to do everything, whether that's fighting off your back, you know, fighting on top, fighting against the cage. You have to be able to do it all to get the highest chances of winning.
Yeah, and I've seen some pictures. Talk about the guys, you know, most recently you've been working with there down in Coconut Creek.
Man, so you mentioned that Robert, since I last fought, he's fought four times. You know, the great thing about being down here at American Top Team and having, you know, just so many guys, and not only having so many guys, but having so many talented guys down here, that at any given day, there's a welterweight in the room who's a high-level guy and who has a fight coming up. So you get to train with these guys. And, you know, I was, not many people know, but I was supposed to schedule the fight. It was right after July. I think it was like August 11th or something. But the show kept getting pushed back and pushed back. So I've pretty much been in a constant training camp since then, for the most part. So my skill set has been constantly evolving, you know, since then. I think it's been, what, 6 months, 7 months, something like that. And, you know, working with Thiago Alves is a big help. Working out with Santiago Ponzinibbio is a big help. And all of just the great grapplers and strikers that are down here in abundance are always improving the game.
Undoubtedly. Well, real quick, Lindsay, go ahead and give some shout outs where they're due. All of you, of course, your friends and teammates you've spoken with about a little bit before, but you know, everybody that's helped you along the way. And let's get those social media plugs as always: Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and so forth.
Man, thank everyone at American Top Team. There's literally too many people to name, but everybody, all the coaches, all the training partners, everyone, man. If it wasn't for them, you know, I wouldn't be main event in this fight next weekend. The social medias, you know, Lindsay Jones 170 on Instagram, Lindsay Jones on Facebook, and Lindsay Jones, I believe, 170 as well on Twitter. Give them a follow and stay up to date with all the latest Sweet Tea news.
Lindsay Sweet Tea Jones returns to action Saturday, March 31st. As he faces this Robert Hale at Valor Fights 48. Be sure to get your tickets now at events.com. This is one you won't want to miss. Lindsay, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, really appreciate it, guys. Y'all have a good night.
We are joined by Chelsea Battleborn Bailey, the 2-0 undefeated mixed martial artist out of Revolution MMA. We saw her on The Ultimate Fighter Season 23, and now she prepares to face top prospect Kelly D'Angelo March 31st at Valor Fights 48. Chelsea, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, Chelsea, to get us going here with our listeners that aren't familiar with you, if you want to just kind of give us a little bit of your background, you know, how you got into MMA, you know, your training experience and career up to now.
I got started in MMA as I wrestled in high school, and a lot of the guys on the team that I wrestled with, they didn't get the opportunity to go to college and wrestle like I did. And a lot of them went towards the route of MMA, and I kind of got pushed into it that a few of my teammates, they had obviously went towards fighting and they took a fight, and they had a card and they had a slot for a girl, and they were like, you should do it. And I was like, well, I don't know how to, you know, boxing or kickboxing or anything. And they were like, oh, you have wrestling, you know, you got a really good base. And so a couple of teammates just kind of took me under their wing, and I was just in, you know, somebody's backyard and somebody's garage, you know, just learning the bare minimum basics of getting it by. And after my first fight, people kind of seen me and realized that I had some talent. And just from there, it kind of was a snowball effect of one thing after another.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that one thing after another. You know, you start off back in 2013. 3 years later, you are on the cast of The Ultimate Fighter 23, which had to be a huge experience, a tremendous experience. Talk a little bit about what led up to that, you know, the selection process and so forth, and then how things went in the house, what it was like to be there.
I had tried out for, I believe it was season 20, and I didn't have enough fights, but I still went there and showed up and showed my face and, you know, kind of had my name out there. And I had just moved. I kind of caught wind that they're opening up for the 115 class. And I was living in Arizona at the time in Flagstaff, and I was kind of doing some Muay Thai there. And I got the opportunity to move to Vegas, and I took that opportunity and started training and tried out. And a lot of the other girls that were there, they had more fights and everything. So whenever the season 23 came around and I went there, that was like more of like my opportunity of what I had been training for, that it was like, this is my time. And so I got the opportunity to fight on The Ultimate Fighter, and I lost the fight to get into the house to Tatiana Suarez. And she went on to win the show. And I was the only fighter that was able to go all three rounds with her.
Yeah, that's definitely, you know, looking at that, you know, at your record there, which didn't actually go as an official loss on your record as his exhibition, you know, Tatiana, one of the best in the world. And, you know, going the rounds there and losing a decision, nothing to hang your head over. And again, that didn't go against your record. So still undefeated. And looking here, you know, it looks like you fought as high as 125. you know, we've spoken, and you told me you can get as low as 105. Talk a little bit about, I know you're also you ride horses competitively. So, one would assume you have to keep your weight down there, pretty low, for that, does that help stay, help you to kind of stay ready if short notice type fights or things like that were to rise up?
Yes. My job title is I'm a thoroughbred exercise rider. And basically, I'm in training to be a jockey, and my job is to keep the horses ready for whenever they race. And jockeys weight, they can't be over any more than 125, but some of the weights that they have to get down to is 110, 115. So I'm consistently always staying near that weight, because with the jockeys, they have to weigh in with the helmets, the boots, the protective gear and the saddle and everything, so they have to keep their weight down as well, and me as a rider, I have to keep my weight near there, so it's like a realistic figure for whenever they ride them to me training them.
All right. So
you're representing Revolution coming up here on in just a couple of weeks now at Valor. Talk a little bit about training there. Any of the people you want to shout out that have been giving you some good work leading up to this fight, and also talk a little bit about the matchup with Kelly D'Angelo. She's an Invicta vet, still signed with Invicta, and I'd have to imagine a win over her would definitely perk some ears up, I would hope.
I don't think I have any specific names. I mean, definitely my coaches and all of my teammates, being a part of a team, I couldn't do it by myself. It's like a piece of the puzzle. You have to have all of them together to get the big picture. And so it's everybody who ever works with me on, holding mitts or even just being my kickboxing partner or working with me in jiu-jitsu. It's pretty much everybody in that gym that I can thank for, leading me up to this fight. I'm not from Hot Springs. Or from Arkansas at that. So for me to be able to go into a gym and say, hey, I have this fight coming up, can you help me? And them, taking me in, it really means a lot to me when you're hopping around and going from different gyms. To be able to go against Kelly, I'm really excited. I haven't fought in a while, and I've had some opportunities with some other matchups that weren't kind of near how this one is, so it's pretty evenly matched. So I'm super excited. I mean, I've been training. I feel really good. I'm really looking forward to this. I am super hyped for it.
Well, Chelsea, real quick, I want to give you the opportunity. If you have any more shout outs, go ahead and throw those out there. But also give us your social media plugs, all the places we can find you and follow your career and so forth. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, you name it.
You can find me on Facebook at Chelsea Bailey. It's C-H-E-L-C. On Instagram, it's Chelsea MMA, C-H-E-L-C-M-M-A. And my Twitter is Chelsea Bailey, C-H-E-L-C-B-A-I-L-E-Y. And you can find me all around on there.
Awesome. Chelsea Battleborn Bailey returns to action in less than 2 weeks, March 31st at Valor Fights 48. It will be a matchup you won't want to miss. Get your tickets now at events.com. Chelsea, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
We are joined by Kelly D'Angelo, 2-1 mixed martial artist out of St. Charles MMA. She prepares to face Chelsea Bailey Saturday, March 31st at Valor Fights 48. Kelly, thank you so much for joining us.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
We appreciate you taking the time, Kelly. We're excited to have you in for a big co-main event next weekend in Nashville. Get some of our listeners up to speed, those that aren't familiar with you. A little bit of background about yourself, your training background, how you got into MMA, what you do. You're a firefighter, I know. You talk a little bit about that. But just kind of a quick little something to get us up to snuff on Kelly D'Angelo.
Sure. I'm actually a firefighter paramedic out of St. Louis. The whole fight thing started with a local charity event called Guns and Hoses, where they actually have the firefighters fight the local cops, and all the money raised goes to Backstoppers. So I got involved in boxing first and did 5-6 of those events, and then was around jiu-jitsu and wrestling at my gym, and they started throwing me in, and, you know, it just got addictive after that. It's like, oh, there's more to this, which evolved into having my first MMA fight, and then also had another fight on Guns N' Roses for the first MMA fight they had there ever, and went from there. So the ball just kind of kept rolling, and I guess last year I signed with Invicta, and just been trying to keep up with work and fighting.
Undoubtedly. Now, you know, of course, we saw you there in Invicta last July. But, you know, as we move on, you know, you're facing Chelsea Bailey next Saturday at Valor Fights 48. And, of course, you know, she is an Ultimate Fighter alum and, you know, a tough competitor. Talk about that matchup and how you feel, you know, you match up in that approach.
I'm actually really excited about this fight. I know she's aggressive. The only fight I saw was, I was actually, the crazy thing is her fight on the Ultimate Fighter show, I was there in person. Ashley Cummings tried out that year, and I was actually studying ringside for the fight on the show. So if you watch the video, if you watch the bleachers in the background, I'm there. So it's kind of funny. I don't know much more about her style except that she wrestled and then whatever I saw with her fight with Tatiana. But I honestly, this is the first person I've ever fought that's my height or shorter. So that's a completely different game changer in a way. But other than that, I like that she's aggressive. She seems like a tough girl, and I think it's going to be a hell of a show for everybody.
Yeah, and of course, Valor Fights 48 is going to be in Nashville and Music City. Have you been to Nashville before?
I have been to Nashville before, yes.
Okay, well,
It's been a while, so, but I had a very fun time when I was there last time, so I'm sure it will be even more fun this time.
Excellent, and the fans are fantastic. They are ravenous, so you're gonna have a blast there. You know, again, talk a little bit more about, you know, your overall aspirations. You spoke with Tim here, and you guys were able to put this fight together. Have you watched Valor Fights before, previously?
Yes. Actually, we just had a teammate on there not too long ago. Luis Tenet.
Yes,
I've never heard of him.
So, I think you guys have actually, Valor has actually had quite a few of the guys from our gym out of it fight for you guys. And of course, you know, any promotion contacts you about fighting, the first thing you do is talk to anybody you know that's fought for them, and they had nothing but good things to say. So I was excited to come down there and experience it.
Undoubtedly. Real quick, Kelly, go ahead and give some shout outs. You know, you talked about your team there in Missouri. You've got a long travel down here. You know, I know you've had a lot of people there to support you. Also, give us, you know, all of your social media plugs, all the places that we can find you and follow what's going on in your career.
Absolutely. I'd like to thank everybody at St. Charles MMA, all my teammates, Mike Rogers, Rob Washington, Jake Heck, Ashley Cummings, she's helped me on the side with this. Float STL, Woodert, DCS Handyman Cleaning Services, and let's see here. I'd like to, you know, do a shout out to my family because, of course, everybody makes sacrifices whenever the loved ones in fight camp. So you don't get to see everybody as much. So, you know, shout out to them for their patience and dealing with it. My Twitter is just at Kelly A. D'Angelo. Facebook is Kelly Ann D'Angelo. And Twitter and Instagram are both the same, both Kelly A. D'Angelo. So I post pretty frequently, whether it's going to be fight stuff or firefighter stuff. It's a toss-up, but I'd love for everybody to follow me and keep up with things because this is just the start, so you're going to be seeing a lot more of me.
Invictus signed fighter Kelly D'Angelo returns to action this Saturday, March 31st at Valor Fights 48. Be sure to get your tickets now at events.com. You won't want to miss it. Kelly, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. See you guys soon.
That's it for a great lineup of interviews, which means it's Valor Hour main event time. This week, we touch on a topic that has been argued back and forth for years, particularly when discussing amateur boxing and kickboxing. And the topic is headgear. Does it make things safer, merely provide an illusion of safety, or none of the above? Okay, so we're here. Of course, we've got our team, Tim Loy. We've also got Mark Laws and then Alan Poole. We're all going to jump in here in a scrum, and we're going to kind of talk about it. Tim, and we'll go ahead and send it over to you. What is your take on the headgear?
Well, I got to say that we kind of have your perfect assembly of viewpoints here, because we've got you as a former fighter and current coach and also commentary person. You have myself, who is the promoter and sees it from that end. You have Mark, who sees things from the medical end. And then you have Alan, who sees things from your fan/photographer end, where the aesthetics of things matter, you know? And so I feel like, you know, to preface things, you do kind of have a little bit of a take from every angle here, which is cool.
Yeah.
You know, personally, I think that from a promotion standpoint, it's never as appealing to promote fights that have headgear, because it makes the fighters appear to be, you know, less skilled or less able. They need this extra layer of protection because they're not at a certain level. If that makes sense, you know, maybe to the average fan. As well as it just doesn't look as good. It's clunky. It gets in the way, you know, it comes off, it gets turned around. They have to stop the action to fix it, things like that. So those aspects of it, make it to where, you know, I don't want to see headgear, but at the same time, we're also fighting a battle a lot of the times where, you know, we are having to present this, you know, our sport, our show, as something that will have initially some barbaric connotations. And so, you know, putting the headgear on there in some situations kind of makes it seem not as violent, even though it really, you know, as we'll get into it, as we'll dive further into this, we'll, you know, it isn't necessarily safer. You know, I think there's plenty of reports out there that will let you know that it's not safer. When it comes to just, you know, the concussive impacts, it helps prevent, you know, superficial wounds, you know, which will, you know, not as much bleeding and whatnot, but lots more repeated blows.
You know, it's interesting when we have fighters, you know, it's usually if anybody says anything about the headgear, it's that they don't want to wear it. But I have had fighters that, you know, when you see them putting the headgear on, you know, you almost see a sense of security there, you know, like especially youth competitors. But like you said, there is no proof that says that as far as, you know, pure blunt trauma, it prevents it. I will say that, you know, maybe if you're hit with a single shot, it changes the effect. It disperses the impact a little bit. But long term, you know, so if you fight for 20 rounds in headgear, you're not going to see as big of a difference. You're not going to see an improvement, I guess, or a lessening of concussions, because they're still going to take those shots. And, you know, I think that in some cases, like you said, it gets turned around, but it also creates more surface area. So a punch that you may have slipped without the headgear on, you know, your glove could snag on and create impact there. So, you know, it actually can work against you. Now, I worked, you know, in the legislative process with the arena combat stuff, and, you know, the headgear was a serious portion of that, and it did fall into play that, you know, it definitely gave, you know, giving the appearance of a safer product is very important. It is part of it. And I think, honestly, I'll get down and be serious about it. I think that with boxing, with amateur boxing, I think that the headgear was a big way of differentiating between professional and amateur, because you've got a professional boxing promoter that's having to pay all of this additional sanctioning and all these different costs. And if you had amateur events coming in and going without the headgear, you really wouldn't have that incentive to promote as much to promote professional fights, if that makes sense. You know, so I think for many, many years, USA Boxing said, okay, we're going to do these shows, these fights. It's going to cost you virtually nothing, but they're going to have to wear headgear. So it's going to lessen the amount of people that come out to watch, maybe. You know, so I remember kind of hearing that argument back in the day. With that being said, I'm going to send it over to Mark. Mark, you're the one that knows firsthand. You know that the word is that it protects from cuts. What do you think that the benefits and disadvantages of a headgear are?
Well, some cuts are minimal compared to concussions. That's just a fact. The bottom line is the shots you don't see coming are the ones that do the most damage. I mean, any of us that have fought, any of us that have even sparred, you know that as well as I do. The headgear, to a T, is problematic. You cannot see those punches coming, those looping right hooks, those looping left hooks. You don't see them coming, and those are the ones that make the difference. Those are the ones that basically scramble your brain, okay? Now, I'm all about fighter safety. That is my only goal in this entire game, is fighter safety. However, aesthetically pleasing, it sucks, man. Nobody wants to see it, you know, despite whether they're an amateur, pro, whatever, because the layman fan doesn't really take into account that. However, yes, there are less cuts. Does it cause more concussions? You're gosh darn right it does. Absolutely. Because the shots you don't see coming are the ones that will absolutely put you out. And headgear limits your peripheral vision. And if your peripheral vision is not there, you're going to get caught, man. That's just a fact. So, you know, maybe for the first one or two fights that you take in kickboxing, yeah, put the headgear on. After that, if you're fighting MMA, you're fighting advanced Muay Thai rules, take the headgear off, man. It's only preventing you from seeing what's coming. And I've seen it both ways.
Mark, why would you say for the first couple to keep it on? Is it just because of the appearance and so forth, or the comfort factor? Why not just take it off altogether and start from scratch, you know, just like you would scratch in a mixed martial arts fight?
Exactly. And I'm glad you asked that, Casey, because essentially the first couple of fights, you don't know what you're getting into. A lot of guys sign up for these fights, they don't know what they're getting into. I'm not trying to see anyone hurt. Anyone hurt means bad news for me. I want to see the best representation of each fighter, and I think the best representation is of them seeing each punch coming, each kick coming, and headgear only inhibits your view of what is coming at you, man. There's different kinds of headgears. There's hundreds of different kinds of headgears. You know, sometimes these guys will have a full face mask, you know, with nose guards and everything. It's just not the move, man. I mean, you're entering into a combat sport where there's a high chance you're going to get punched in the face or kicked in the face. Either way, it's detrimental. I just assume, see them from the get-go, have no headgear, be prepared, and address those situations, man.
All right. Well, Jay, I'm going to head over. Alan, you know, I want to get your perspective, man. Of course, you're a tremendous photographer. You're always at the Valor Fights events getting the best shots. let's just cut to the chase, man. Is this headgear screwing up your photo shots?
Long term, yes. There's only one instance I can think of where the headgear looks cool, and that's when the fighter is getting the headgear put on by his coach. Like, because there's kind of like a moment right there where you can still see their face before you put that stupid fucking thing on and lace it. But there's that moment right there, which I think is kind of like a special moment where it's almost like they're putting on armor or whatever, and their coach is there, you know, making sure their armor is okay before they go in. But other than that, they just look like dorks with fucking pads on their heads. I mean, not really, but it's just you take something that is so cool and already almost separating itself. Like, nobody has the balls to get up and do a cage fight or Muay Thai or anything like that. But then all of a sudden, now you throw it in. I just totally lost my train of thought.
And also, I want to ask.
What?
The fact is, you're entering into a combat sport. You signed your name to a dotted line. You're in there for a fight. The headgear only impedes your vision. The only thing that can stop a fight is impeding your vision. So if you can't see what's coming at you, how are you supposed to defend that?
Yeah,
you know, these headgears are, they vary. They vary, as we all know this. You know, there's some headgears that cover your nose, your eyes, your everything, your peripheral vision. It's just not safe, man. I would much rather wake a man up, or man or woman up, without headgear on and explain to them what has happened to them, as say, well, you know, he had his headgear on, you didn't see a right hook coming. He caught you with it, and then he caught you with a right head kick. You know, it doesn't make any sense to me. It doesn't make sense to me. It's not safe. There's no more safety protocol that's involved in it. You know, a concussion is a concussion, whether you're wearing headgear or not.
Okay, follow up just a little bit. Yeah, like when the headgear gets knocked sideways, I mean, there's no way you can look cool when your headgear is knocked sideways and then you're getting hit with another punch while your headgear's already sideways. I mean, you're just making memes about yourself. So, but I'm not a big fan of it. I think that it takes something that's really cool. Oh, that's what I was trying to say earlier, was that, you know, the fans are already kind of separated from the fighters as is, but then you put that mask on them, you know, where I don't know. I feel like it just separates the fighters even further from the crowd, and it's harder to see the fighter's face and what he's going through and what's good. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but I'm not for it.
Definitely 100%. It kind of makes you appear like fighter A and fighter B from like one of the old Nintendo games. You know what I mean? Like, you don't really have an identity or so forth. Tim, real quick, you know, things have changed, you know, for amateur kickboxing here in the state of Tennessee recently, you know, last year or so. You know, we're allowing, you know, after three bouts for you to take the headgear off. Is this something you think that's vastly improved the spectator portion of the fighting? And do you think that this is kind of the start of a trend? Do you think that it's going to continue on from here, and maybe we'll see the abolition of headgear altogether eventually?
I think it's possible. I think, you know, with the proper arguments and the right people kind of presenting their case, and I think that, you know, different commissions may be, you know, slower to get on board with it than others. I think you're seeing in other states, you know, I think you see there are some states where there's no headgear required now for amateurs, and here in Tennessee now, with when UMAF is running things, we can lose it after you know, they're on their third fight, and they'll include the MMA. So, you know, when you have experienced MMA guys that want to try kickboxing for the first time, as long as they're fighting someone else that's had some fights, you know, we can lose it. But you know, same time, you know, I gotta say, these debuts, at the same time, sometimes you're getting some guys that are really skilled and really good and have trained for a long time. And even though they just don't have any fights, they still got to put that on, and they're still able to really, you know, whip kicks up their heart and throw from weird angles that headgear is going to obstruct. So, you know, hopefully we do get it that way here one day.
Yeah. And Mark mentioned it before.
The only reason fights get stopped is because fighters cannot see. So why in the hell would you put something in front of their eyes to stop them from being able to see a strike coming? I mean,
there are a lot of different types of headgear. You know, that like there are some better than others. And so if you get in a spot where, you know, you've got two different types, one may obstruct the vision more than the other one. And so then it creates an unfair advantage sometimes, you know. I mean, who knows?
100%.
Yeah. So it's definitely any final words on this topic, I think it's a very viable topic. I mean, a lot of people are talking about it. We're always kind of grumbling about it under our breath. You know what I mean? When it comes time to have a fight, especially, you know, I know as a coach, if I have a guy who's had three fights, three or four fights, and then he's fighting an opponent who I know is good and he's had two fights, and then Tim has to give me the news that, well, we're going to have to wear the headgear. And then I grumble under my breath for a few minutes, you know, because I know we have to do it, you know. And then my fighter has to grumble under his breath. But real quick, any final words on this topic?
Listen, people can be knocked out from any punch, any kick. I want them to see any kick, any punch being thrown at them. Headgear only impedes your vision. It doesn't protect you. It may protect you from cuts, but God dang it, that's what I'm hired for. I stop any bleeding. That doesn't matter. The problem is that if you don't see the shit coming, you don't know it's coming. So that's my argument with it.
All right. Any words? Any is that it?
I'm good on that.
All right.
Yeah, I think I'm good.
Well, that being said, that does it for this week's Valor Hour main event. It's been a good one. And it also brings to close another episode of the Valor Hour. Now, I need to give a huge thanks to Alan and Mark both for coming in here on this discussion and for all your great insight. Remember to subscribe on Apple Podcasts as well as Stitcher. And please share this broadcast. We return right here next week as we continue our discussion on the biggest combat sports news from across the globe. A huge thanks to our great lineup of guests this week, as well as a huge shout out to Ogle, Elrod, and Beryl for their tremendous support. For myself, Casey Oxenstierna, and Valor Fights President Tim Loy, this has been the Valor Hour.
For more information on upcoming events, visit valorfights.com or find them at Valor Fights on both Facebook and Twitter. This has been the Valor Hour, powered by the law offices of Ogle, Elrod, and Beryl on Radio Influence.
Here is Kevin Kennedy and Rich Herrera with an Inside the Dugout Quick Fix.
What is going on with Kemp? Has he found the fountain of youth? He was a guy that I wasn't even sure the Dodgers were going to bring to camp. And now he's skinned at bats and he's taking them from other people.
Well, Rich, I saw him last week. I got a chance to talk to him. And when he walked into the and through the gates and into the ballpark, I was already there talking to one of my colleagues. And Matt and I have always gotten along well. And I turned around. And I thought I saw a different human being. When they said he lost 40 pounds, it's one thing to say that and watch TV and go, yeah, I think he lost it. Did he lose 40? But when you see him in person, which is the only way to evaluate, in my opinion, you've got to see guys in person. He lost 40 pounds. He looks like a different human being. He's faster. His bat speed is better. His pitch selection's better. It's been really interesting to watch Matt Kemp. The last game I did last Sunday, he went 3-for-3 with the home run.
Inside the Dugout with Kevin Kennedy and Rich Herrera can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.